A Victorious Union by Oliver Optic. Chapter 4. The Revelations of the Revelers. "We won't go home till morning," sang the two counterfeit revelers as they approached the fire of the bivouackers. The four carousels sprang to their feet when the first strain reached their ears. They were not as intoxicated as they might have been, for they were able to stand with considerable firmness on their feet, after the frequency with which the bottle had been passed among them. They did not do what soldiers would naturally have done at such an interruption, grasp their muskets, and it was probable they had no muskets to grasp. "We won't go home till morning, till daylight doth appear," continued the two officers, without halting in their march towards the revelers. No weapons of any kind were exhibited, but the tipplers stood as though transfixed with astonishment or alarm where they had risen, but were rather limp in their attitude. They evidently did not know what to make of the interruption, and they appeared to be waiting for further developments on the part of the intruders. "It isn't morning yet, but we just emptied our bottle," said Christie, with a swaggering and slightly reeling movement, and suiting his speech to the occasion. "How are ye, shipmates?" "Up to G, jolly tars," replied one of the men, with a broad grin on his face. "We done got two full bottles left at your sarvice." "Much obleeged," returned the lieutenant, as he took the bottle the reveler passed to him. "Here's success to us all in a heap, and success to our side in the battle that's going on." "I'm with you up to the armpits," added Grains, as another of the four handed him a bottle. One sniff at the neck of the bottle was enough to satisfy Christie, who was a practical temperance man of the very strictest kind, and he had never drank a glass of anything intoxicating in all his life. The bottle contained applejack, or apple brandy, the vilest fluid that ever passed a tippler's gullet. He felt obliged to keep up his character, taken for the occasion, and he retained the mouth of the bottle at his lips long enough to answer the requirement of the moment. But he did not open them, or permit a drop of the nauseous and fiery liquid to pollute his tongue. It was necessary for him to consider that he was struggling for the salvation of his beloved country to enable him even to go through the form of taking a drink. Grains was less scrupulous on the question of temperance, and he took a swallow of the applejack, but that was enough for him, for he had never tasted anything outside of the medicine chest which was half as noxious. If he had been compelled to keep up the drinking, he would have realized that his punishment was more than he could bear. Fortunately, the tipplers had no tumblers, so that the guests were not compelled to pour out the fluid and drink it off. All drank directly from the bottles, so that the two officers could easily conceal, in the semi-darkness, the extent of their indulgence. "Who be you, strangers?" asked the man who had acted thus far as spokesman of the party. "My name is Tom Bulger, born and brought up in the island of Grey Tobacco, and this feller is my friend and shipmate Sam Riley," replied Christie, twisting and torturing his speech as much as was necessary. "Now who be you, fellers?" "Born and fetched up in Mobile. My name is Bird Riley, and I reckon the other feller is a first cousin of mine, for he's got the same name, and he's almost as handsome as I am. Where was you born, Sam?" "About 10 miles up the Alabama, where my father was the overseer on a plantation before the war," replied Grains, as promptly as though he had been telling the truth. "Then you must be one of my cousins, for I done got about 250 on 'em in the state of Alabama. Give us your fin, Sam." Bird Riley and Sam shook hands in due and proper form, and the relationship appeared to be fully established. The names of the three other revelers were given, but the spokesman was disposed to do all the talking, though he occasionally appealed to his companions to approve of what he said. It was evident that he was the leading spirit of the party, and that he controlled them. He was rather a bright fellow, while the others were somewhat heavy and stupid in their understanding. The bottles were again handed to the guests, both of whom went through the form of drinking without taking a drop of the vile stuff. "What be you uns doing here?" asked Bird Riley, after the ceremony with the bottle had been finished. We was both tooken in a schooner that was going to run the blockade, answered Christie. We was coming out and past Christian, and was picked off Chandelier Island, and fotched over here. We didn't feel too much to hum after we lost our wages, and we done took a whaleboat to come ashore here, with only one bottle of whiskey atween us. That's all there is on. Now, how comes you uns here? I'm the mate of the topsail schooner West Wind, and others is the crew. All but two we done left on board with the cap'n, replied Bird, apparently with abundant confidence in his newly found friends. You left her? Asked Christie. That's just what we done do. Where's the West Wind now? Inquired Christie, deeply interested in the subject at this point. She done come down from Mobile 3 days ago, and done waited for a chance to run the blockade. Her hull is full of cotton, and she done got a deck load, too, answered Bird Riley without any hesitation. Where does this West Wind keep herself now, Bird? Just inside the pint, astern of the Treflotiger. The Treflotiger? Repeated Christie. That's her name, or something like it. I never see it writ out. She's a schooner, I reckon, continued Christie, concealing what knowledge he possessed in regard to the vessel. She ain't no schooner, you bet. She's just the finest steamer that ever run inter Mobile, and they've turned her into a cruiser, Bird Riley explained. How big is she? I heard someone say she was about 800 tons, and I'll bet she pick up every Yankee craft that she gets a sight on. And you say the Treflatiger is an anchor off the point? Added Christie, not daring to call the steamer by her true name. That's just where she is, and the West Wind is hitched to her, like a tandem team, replied Bird Riley. Look here, Tom Bulger, you don't make love to that bottle as though you meant business. Take another drink and show you done got some manhood in you. The bottle went the rounds again, and the guests apparently took long pulls, but really they did not taste a drop of the infernal liquid. That's good peasin', Bird Riley, but it is not just the stingo that I like best, said Christie, as he wiped his mouth with his sleeve in proper form, for he did not like the smell of the fluid lightning that clung to his lips. Whiskey suits me most, but they waste the corn making bread on it, and there ain't much on it left to make the staff of life. Howsomever, we don't choke to death on Applejack when we can get enough on it, argued Bird Riley. Just now you got a tandem team hitched up out on the Treflotiger and the West Wind, continued Christie cautiously and with apparent indifference, drawing the mate of the schooner back to the matter in which he was the most deeply interested. What's this team hitched up that way for? Is the steamer going to tow the schooner up to Mobile? I reckon you're a little more'n half drunk, Tom Bulger, replied Bird Riley with a vigorous, hoarse laugh. Tow the schooner up to Mobile? Didn't I tell yer the Treflotiger's been waiting here 3 days for a good chance to run out? You said that as true as you was born, added Grains, who thought it necessary to say something, for he had been nearly silent from the beginning. Sam Riley ain't quite so drunk as you be, Tom Bulger, and he knows what's what. And thar he shows the Riley blood in his carcass, chuckled the mate. And you said the West Wind was loaded with cotton in the hole and on deck, added Grains, hoping to hurry the conference along a little more rapidly. That's just what I said. I reckon you ain't much use to Applejack, for it fusticates your intellect and makes yer forget how old you are. Come, take another, just to set your head upright, said Bird, passing the bottle to Christie, who was doing his best to keep up the illusion by talking very thick and swaying his body about like a drunken man. Both the guests went through the ceremony of imbibing, which was only a ceremony to them. The fire had exhausted its supply of fuel, and it was fortunate that the darkness prevented the revelers from measuring the quantity left in the bottles as they were returned to the owners, or they might have seen that the strangers were not doing their share in consuming the poison. Sam Riley does honor to the blood as runs in his body, for he ain't no more drunk than I am, and he knows what we talking about, said the mate, who seemed to be greatly amused at the supposed effect of the liquor upon Christie. "You won't know nothing about the Trafalgar or the West Wind in half an hour from now, Tom Boulder. I reckon it don't make no difference to you about the tandem team, and tomorrow morning you won't know how the team's hitched up." "I don't think I will," replied Christie boozily, as he rolled over on the sand and then struggled for some time to resume his upright position, to the great amusement of Bert Riley and his companions. "But Sam Riley's got blood in him, the best blood in Alabamy, and he can tell you all about it if you want to know. He can stand up again a whole bottle of Applejack. I say, Cousin Bird, what's this tandem team hitched up for?" asked Greens, permitting his superior officer to carry out the illusion upon which he had entered, in order more effectually to blind the mate and induce him to talk with entire freedom. "I reckon you ain't too drunk to understand what I say, Sam, as the other feller is." "I'm just drunk enough to understand you, Cousin Bird. But I calay I won't know much about it by tomorrow morning," added Greens. "Let's take another round, Sam. But I reckon Tom Bulger's got more'n he can carry now," continued the mate. Bird took a long draught from the bottle and then passed it to his guest. Three of the four revelers had already toppled over at full length on the ground, and Christie thought he could hurry matters by doing the same thing, and he tumbled over all in a heap. Greens drank nothing himself, though he contrived to spill a quantity of the fluid on the ground, so that it might not seem too light to his only remaining wakeful companion. The last dram of Bird had been a very heavy one, and the engineer realized that he could not hold out much longer. "What's that tandem team for?" asked Greens in the thickest of tones, while he swayed back and forth as Bird was doing by this time. "The Trafalgar's gwine to tow the West Wind out, and both on 'em's sure to be tooken," stammered the mate. "We uns don't believe in it, so we runned away and left Captain Sullendine to paddle his own punt. They get off at 3 in the morning." Bird Riley took another drink, and then he toppled over. End of chapter. Read by Amanda Eland for Lit to Go. On the web at fcit.usf.edu.